Welcome to the My Third Bloom podcast, where we get into unfiltered conversations about the powerful journey of aging gracefully during perimenopause and menopause, breaking taboos and embracing transformation. I'm your host, Trisha Blake, founder, CEO, and Chief Awesome Officer of My Third Bloom, where we are on a mission to empower those experiencing perimenopause and menopause. We're guided by empathy and fueled by innovation. We provide support, education, and resources. Whether you're navigating the roller coaster of hormonal changes or seeking a supportive community, you're in the right place. Buckle up and get ready to bloom with strength, wisdom, and grace. Hey, listeners, welcome to the next episode of the My Third Bloom podcast. Our next guest is a seasoned marketing brand and operations coach and strategist with a passion for film and television production with over 20 years of experience. As a partner in Admit One Productions and Double J Strategic Consulting and Coaching, she's known for her expertise in developing collaborative teams for organizations like Giant Tiger, Loblaws, and Hudson's Bay Company. She's also a certified mindful self-compassion teacher and a certified mindfulness practitioner, bringing powerful resources to her coaching and consulting. Welcome to another insightful episode where we'll have an engaging conversation about empowering women during the menopausal transition, do a little myth busting maybe, and educate to elevate, bring up our understanding. Please join me in giving a warm My Third Bloom podcast welcome to Jen James.
So nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy you said yes. It's fantastic to have you on the show. For our listeners, I had the pleasure of meeting Jen last October, I believe, on a charity walk. And, you know, we were talking and I was just like, just fascinated by the work that she does as it relates to mindfulness and mindful self-compassion and mindfulness as a practice. And I attended an event, and I don't know if you remember this, but I remember coming into the Zoom call because it was virtual, and I was blown away by the welcome soft landing that you had opened up the session with. And I wanted to know if we could do that welcome home. Like I wrote it down.
That was a very beautiful experience to have you part of, and a really wonderful evening. And yeah, to your point, that was a workshop that I had done for at the ESG church, and it was a hybrid session. It was like in person and really introducing mindful self-compassion to people that haven't really had the experience of being part of it before or in the past. I would love to do that practice.
Love for you to share with our listeners, because it impacted me in such a way that I was like, ooh, I love this.
Thank you for asking for that. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that today. And I'm so excited that you've asked for that. So yes, we often start a practice or coming into a space together by doing something we call a soft landing. And what that does is it actually just creates warmth, connection, and approachability, bringing everyone together into the same mindset. And so this particular one was actually created by a gentleman by the name of Chris Germer, and it's called Welcome. It's a welcome meditation, a radical homecoming practice. So what I invite everybody to do, if you're listening, is really just take a moment and just sit back, let your body settle. And if you feel like it, you can close your eyes while I take you on this journey of welcoming you home. And when I say welcome home, I mean welcome home to this moment. The only moment of time that we really have. Welcome home to your body. And no other body. that without which you would not be here today. And welcome home to the many parts of your body, all of which are trying their very best to promote your wishes and aspirations. And welcome home to your emotions, both pleasant and unpleasant, all of which are constantly trying to teach you something you need to know. And welcome home to the emotion of shame, the most difficult human emotion, which is also a pure expression of the human wish to be loved. Welcome home to your wish to be loved. That invisible thread that makes you stay connected even when everything else falls apart. And welcome home to your vulnerability, which is an essential truth of human experience, even when it scares you. And welcome home to woundedness, personal and cultural, across time and space, the invisible substrate upon which every human life unfolds. Welcome home to your fierceness, a strong arm that protects you from harm and, when necessary, demands equality and fairness. Welcome home to forgiveness and mercy, the ultimate medicine for human ignorance and human frailty, always available when you're ready to forgive. Welcome home to self-forgiveness and self-mercy, because the misdeeds of others have also taken residence within us since birth. And welcome home to your many identities, including those that have been overlooked or devalued by others. They are all precious and worthy of celebration. Welcome home to your hidden identities, your hidden parts, who yearn to be loved and to be set free. Welcome home to your journey to freedom and to this particular moment, as unfinished as it may be, as it is. Welcome to your yearning to be free, to the ache of feeling unfinished, of being incomplete. And welcome home to compassion, the power that surrounds us all and has the capacity to transform all that hurts and all that we are. Welcome home.
Thank you. That
You're
was
welcome.
So important. Oh my gosh. I'm like, heart hugs, heart hugs, heart hugs for everybody.
Yeah, that even just like even saying it, I just get goosebumps because it has so much beauty in the content of what we say and that idea of being so welcoming.
Yes, and welcome to our listeners.
Yes, to everyone.
Everyone that's listening, again, this is so awesome to have you on the show. And
thank you.
This practice of mindful self-compassion, you know, you have a very diverse background that spans marketing, brand strategy, executive coaching, you're part of Lean In Canada, you're a mentor, and you're a mindful self-compassion teacher and a mindfulness practitioner. Tell me more. Tell us more about your journey and how these seemingly different areas of interest like converge into this beautiful concept of mindfulness and compassion and mindful self-compassion.
Well, let's see. The start of it all is goes back to my mom, truthfully. Like, I lived in a world growing up in a constant state of change, and I think we all do. But my mom was sort of this woman in my life who was this fierce kind of, I looked at her as a fierce kind of warrior. When I think of her, I put her next to Wonder Woman, because
I love
she,
that.
like, she had this stake in the ground of just this emblem of courage. And part of it was because she was chronically ill my whole life. And, but she, it didn't, she didn't wear the face of illness. She wore the face of bravery
And
and,
courage.
yeah, and courage. And a lot of the times when we were kids, she would be, at home in bed, bedridden, and she would be, we would know that she was, in pain and she was struggling, but she never made us feel that she was. She never made us feel like she was, we were missing out or that she was struggling and suffering. She was always showing up for us. She was always that powerhouse, and she was always, coming to the PTA meetings and being that face of power and courage. And part of what she taught me in those and all those moments in childhood when I would face my struggles was she taught me the power of storytelling and the power of connecting and bringing people together, which has been the essence of what I do in my world and my work. So everything that I do in marketing and branding and executive coaching and everything is always starting with the power of storytelling, because it really brings people together. And she taught me that. So everything that she would do, everything where she would start from would be to tell us a story. And she would use storytelling to kind of break down barriers or to bring people together, to soften a hard moment, to make a difficult conversation a little bit easier. And so that's sort of one of the biggest things that I took away from her. My mom passed away a couple of years ago. And she always did it. And she was kind of the person that introduced me to mindfulness, because I would tell you I wouldn't have known what mindfulness was. But now that I think back to it, my mom was probably the embodiment of somebody who was one of the most mindful people and compassionate people that I knew, that I was surrounded with in my life. So she was sort of the embodiment of everything that I've kind of cultivated and grown into becoming. And so that's where it all started for me, was learning from somebody who I admired and to this day still admire so much.
I love that.
So yeah, so that's where I'm gonna say it all started. That's the
That was your
that's
becoming,
that
your
was my
origin
becoming.
story.
Yeah, and I don't know that I realized it until I was in my 40s, but sometimes it takes a little bit of time to realize where all the pieces come from and where you're meant to be and like how that all kind of comes together. But I owe it all to her.
Oh, I love that. The seeds were sown so early,
Yeah.
right? She started to weave the story
She did without
for
even knowing
you,
it. Yeah.
right?
Or maybe it was intentional. My mom was a bit of an intentional person, so
I love that. So, I guess, can we just bring it back to like basics? Like, how do you define mindfulness and mindful self-compassion?
Aha, yes. It's a common question I get,
No, really?
yes. And it's interesting, especially today, and I was having this conversation with someone earlier, because I think that the trajectory of mindfulness has been it's accelerated so much over the last 10 years. If you ask someone, have you heard of mindfulness 10 years ago, people would have been like, maybe, I'm not so sure. And now it's part of like everyday conventional like everybody's language, everybody says, I'm mindful. And I'm not sure that people actually really know what they mean when they say that they're being mindful. So it's a very, very poignant question. So when we talk about being mindful or what mindfulness is, it is being in the present moment and being aware of the present moment. Excuse my dogs who are not being very mindful. Of
It's okay.
the being aware in the present moment of your thoughts, experiences, feelings, sensations, all of what's happening in the present moment. And the key to mindfulness is the absence of judgment. So I think people kind of forget the nuance of the absence of judgment piece, but that is a big part of mindfulness and the practice of mindfulness is this idea of absence of judgment. And I'll give an example of that in that I think people often assume that they, in order to be mindful, they have to meditate. And when they have to meditate, it means that they have to go into a practice for like 20 minutes of meditation. And that becomes very overwhelming very quickly, I think. And so there's this sort of assumption that in order to meditate, you have to sit down for 20 minutes, close your eyes, and be silent and clear your mind. Right. And so in mindfulness, it's actually when we approach a practice, which is like a meditation, which is a resource to enhance mindfulness and increase awareness and acceptance of ourselves. It's actually just acknowledging where you're at in that moment. So if your mind is racing and you're distracted and you're tense, mindfulness, the practice of mindfulness would say, I'm accepting myself as being in that state in this moment and allowing myself to be there, not judging that I'm there, not trying to change that I'm there, just recognizing, acknowledging, noticing all those tense feelings, the distracted mind, and letting that be part of this experience for today. And that's okay. That's part of being human.
Meeting ourselves where we're at, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Being present, and but yet still, it's hard to do, right?
That's why it takes practice. It's a lifelong journey. It's not meant to be like a light switch, like I'm going to choose to be mindful today. Check, check.
Cross
And
the
yeah, exactly. Points.
list.
And mindful self-compassion is not so different. Mindful self-compassion is recognizing that in order to activate self-compassion, mindfulness needs to be present. So we need to be aware that we're struggling. So self-compassion is basically saying that we're taking kindness, turning it inwards to self in the time of struggle, compassi, which is Latin for struggle. And when we're doing that with the addition of this idea of common humanity. So common humanity means that we recognize that we're not in it alone. So when oftentimes when we feel in times of struggle, our natural reaction is to isolate, run away, avoid. I want to get out of here, right? Like I and we often convince ourselves in our inner narrative that we are alone in this experience. And so why would I want to talk to anybody about that? They're going to think I'm crazy. They're going to, you know, I and we have that sort of like inner voice that kind of convinces us that okay, I'm just going to go and hide out in my bedroom or in my house and struggle all alone. So mindful self-compassion brings in this embodiment of we're not alone in our experiences and our struggles. Everyone struggles. Everyone has this common thread. And when we start to realize that, that painful experience starts to break down just at the crack. There's a crack. And we start to be able to be a little bit kinder to ourselves, treating ourselves with kindness as we would a loved one.
Love that. How do you spoke about that inner voice. How do you silence that inner voice to get to that space. Like, maybe silence isn't the right word, but you know when they talk about silencing the inner critic, and you're, you know, no one else is going through it, or, you know, no one's really going to listen to me. How do you make that a little quieter?
Yeah, it's such a good question. I'm so glad you asked it, because it's I get this question a lot, and if you actually started the answer yourself in that, first of all, it's acknowledging that it's there. And recognizing is one of the most powerful things, is recognizing that this inner critic is there, and that it's exactly that it's sort of, it's an inner critic voice, right? And we also have the ability to have a compassionate voice, where there's always a yin to the yang, so to speak, right? And so if we have an inner critic voice, we also can have a compassionate voice. We convince ourselves that of the inner critic so much more, because we give it so much more power. However, we have the yin to the yang. When the inner critic is rising, this first stage in and it's not silencing. That's exactly
That's
the
what I said.
point that, yeah,
Yeah,
it's,
I said it's not the
we
right
have,
word.
part of it is the acceptance that it's part of the human experience to have negative emotions and difficult emotions. And the more we feel, the more we heal.
The more we feel, the more we heal. So we have to allow ourselves to feel the feels, right?
To feel the feels from our head to our heels.
I like that.
and get familiar with what that means for us as an individual. So my feels are not the same as your feels. My sensations and what triggers me is not going to be the same as what triggers you and what comes up for you. And so maybe for me, my inner critic might be rooted in a belief that I don't feel valued, or I don't feel worthy. And getting familiar, and I do a lot of work with people on this specific thing, because it's so ingrained in human, it's our belief system. It goes all the way back. But understanding where your inner critic is coming from, the root of the inner critic, helps you to tap into, okay, so my inner critic comes up, and what are some of the thoughts, feelings, and, you know, sensations that I experience when that is present? And so your body actually triggers you before your mind, but we often only tune in when our mind activates. So your body can be a signal to you that things are coming. And
so,
you can...
Yeah, no, continue. Sorry.
No. You can ask me questions. It's totally
I'm like,
okay.
I'm gonna jump on that. I'm gonna jump on
that's
that.
okay. Yeah, that's a big one sometimes for people.
With the triggers and our body giving us signals, but we're not necessarily in tune with it. I'm like, I'm very in tune when I'm hungry, and I will pay attention to that.
Because we know that signal,
right? But the emotion. I'm not, we're not really gonna touch that one. But I'm gonna
Yet.
go and feed. I'm gonna feed.
Because our body, and that's a good example of one that we're so habitually used to. You know, the grumble, that feeling in your tummy that kind of activates that, oh, okay, the habitual thinking of, oh, I'm hungry. Am I really?
Yeah.
Right? But it's a pattern. That's a thought pattern. Right? So it's very similar to thought patterns that activate negative, whether it's negative behavior or negative thinking. It's the same, it's the exact same thing.
Right.
There's certain things that might happen in your body. It could be like a tension in your shoulders, or something happens in your neck, or a twitch of your eye, or various things that could happen in your body. Everybody is different. Everybody is different. And so again, what happens for me, for me, it used to be jaw clenching, is going to be a different signal. You know, dogs are body readers. So people who have dogs often, the dogs will trigger as well and react to signals. So it's a different experience for different people.
Right, and it's so interesting. I have another question.
Yeah,
I know
for
we
sure.
use the word inner critic, Like, is there a different word? Like, critic just seems, I don't know, so not harsh, but
You're right, it is.
is.
It's not a pretty naming convention for your inner voice. So
Right.
I often say to people, name the person inside your head. Give them a name. Come up with a name that feels good for you,
Right.
your compassionate voice and your negative voice, like your critical voice. It's almost like I almost envision it like the devil and the angel on your shoulder.
Right.
Like, if from a visual perspective, people sometimes are visual, some people are auditory.
Right.
So, creating kind of, it's almost like having an avatar too.
You're speaking my language now.
I know exactly. That's what I was saying. Come up with some avatars of I often in workshops, I get people to draw what they
Okay.
think their inner critic actually could look like in a visual visual way, and then start to associate thoughts, feelings. And you can actually, they come a bit come to life because they are creating a persona inside of you. They have been for probably decades, right?
Yeah.
And it feels very overpowering. And so it's about kind of taking that back and repurposing.
To move forward, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yes. And again, it's not necessarily about like I can get rid of this, but what I can do is I can manage it better. I need to understand it. We have to, again, it's about we use things with mindful self-compassion. It's not, we can't run away from that. Like the more we run away from it, the more we're giving it more power to fuel.
Right.
So we want to lean in, learn, build the toolkit, and then we're giving ourselves power back.
I love that.
Yeah.
So, with the My Third Bloom podcast is about aging gracefully and navigating the, perimenopause and menopause and the many things that come with it. Some good, some maybe dependent. My inner voice might not so, have some nice things to say,
Me too.
but how can mindfulness and mindful self-compassion, I guess, contribute to a smoother menopausal transition? And like, how do we incorporate it? How do we grow our capacity for that? Because there's like stress. You don't know what's going on. Your body is changing. This is a big change, as we're talking about managing change. And I'm a change practitioner, by day. This is an interesting change to manage. And how can mindfulness and mindful self-compassion help me and others navigating this journey, navigating our third bloom.
Yeah,
Done.
third, the various stages of our third bloom.
Yes.
So, just to be like scientifically and empirical, like empirical research shows that mindful self-compassion and mindfulness, like it's undisputed at this point that it supports and people who are struggling with various different types of mental health issues, whether it's stress, depression, mild anxiety, so. If it's getting into particulars like that, it's 100% now proven that both mindful self-compassion and mindfulness are resources that support people in moving through those difficult types of affected treatments, as a treatment intervention, as an intervention.
Right.
But without like leaving that part aside, so getting into a little bit more specific around like why specifically for menopause and your body and your mind is suddenly hit up. Like if I were to describe it, you're suddenly hit up with these changes. And again, everybody is going to go through it at a different stage and in a different moment with a different effect, men
Yeah.
and women. And you don't know when it's coming. So it just kind of is almost like it's like a suck it to you kind of moment, right? You're like, whoa, one moment I feel great. And the next minute, whoa, suddenly I can't think straight and my body's changing. And everything, you know, it can feel cataclysmic.
Yes.
And so, and it can feel like, it can feel like a bit of a catastrophe moment for some people, right? And I know some people, it takes longer, it's more progressive. So
Yeah.
again, it's that not one size fits all.
So.
And so the nice thing about what a mindfulness and mindful self-compassion practice can do is it can help give you tools and resources that are simple to integrate into your everyday life that help alleviate. So when you talk about things like losing sleep, which is very common in perimenopause, right here,
me too.
Yeah.
Hands up.
Yeah, you're like, whoa, what's going on? I suddenly am up half the night. So using things like meditation practices and resources to calm your mind in a moment when you feel very disrupted and it feels very unusual can be very beneficial. And you want to start sooner than later so that it's not just like a reactive in the moment. Right. So there's lots of resources outside of meditation, but, you know, listening to biurnal, we call them biurnal beat based music that lead you and lull you into sleep as an example. Or for instance, when you're trying to make sense of all the different body changes. We were talking earlier, I was saying like my eyes feel so dry, you know, and I can't get them.
Yeah.
Like they never feel like they're going to be, you know, moist and nice again. Well, sometimes part of the mindfulness practice is how do I accept things as they are and stop fighting and striving for something that may not be possible. This may be as I am for the next while. And so part of the mindfulness practice is sitting with acceptance,
what does
connecting
that
to
look
your
like?
body, connecting to your body.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of the very common practices in mindfulness is a body scan. And in mindful self-compassion is a compassionate body scan. So creating loving awareness to your body part by part. And it's almost like a gratitude for your body and actually exploring your body head to toe with your eyes closed, sometimes lying down, sometimes seated, but just actually taking a moment to really connect to the parts of your body and understanding how they are feeling, what you are seeing in your body, you know, and recognizing that there's a lot of your body that is really strong and powerful and charged. And so there may be some things that are not perfect, but as humans, we're perfectly imperfect. So everything can't be perfect all the time.
Right. It's so true.
And so can we soften? And it's not necessarily always about focusing on what's not great, but how do we focus on the things that are wonderful and the gifts that we have? And our body is a gift.
Love that. Our body is a gift.
It is a gift.
Here. And
You know?
that's a mindset shift, right? Like
It is a, yes.
to get
But
to that level of acceptance.
It takes time. It takes time, but it's baby steps, and it takes the practice of noticing and awareness. If you've never tuned into your body before, you've never kind of stopped, just actually even a, you know, 10 second practice where you close your eyes and you just think of one thing in your body that you're grateful for, you know, one thing that did something awesome for you today or just showed up, you know, maybe it's your feet. My
All
feet
right.
got me out of bed this morning.
Touch the ground. I'm
They
ready to go.
touched the ground and got me to work.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds simple, but in this world and how chaotic everything is, and, you know, it is the simple things that actually matter the most.
I love that.
Yeah.
You know, just even it's the acknowledgement, and you talked about trying to validate your own experience and emotions without judgment. And I wonder, you know, as you know, for those navigating the menopausal transition, How can we apply like what we've scanned, what we're learning, what we're taking in, to effectively communicate our needs and concerns, like if we going to a doctor, because I know that's a challenge for some people. So how can we use mindful self-compassion to effectively communicate, what's going on, what our concerns are during this particular phase of life?
Yeah, it's that's a really good one. I like this. So one of the things that's really important about, I think, in the journey, and you're talking about like going specifically to see a doctor, is remembering in going to a doctor, one of the biggest questions we asked in mindful self-compassion is, what do I need?
What do I need?
Yeah.
What do I need?
What do I need? And so one of the questions that we often forget to ask ourselves is, what do I need? What do I need? Not what does everybody else need from me, or what does everyone think that I need, but what do I need? How do I feel? And being authentic with answering that question before you go to the doctor and writing down. I always write down everything that I know that I need going into the doctor, and being kind of very, like making sure that I go through everything and getting the answers that make me feel empowered when I leave, and making sure that I stick to that, because oftentimes you can get derailed by what other people think you need, or oftentimes not necessarily getting all the answers that you need in that moment. But try to stick to the script of, what do I need? And that can be very, very empowering.
Incredibly so.
Yeah. And one of the things that I teach for sure, and this is like a practice for mindful self-compassion, is it's about loving awareness. So loving awareness is connecting back into self. And one really easy way to do that is just pause for a moment and put your hand on your heart. We don't often do this as like a practice normally in every day, but listen, you can put your hand on your heart anywhere, anytime.
Right.
And it's a gift. Not
You
only that
feel
you have
it.
hearts,
Yeah.
we have hearts, but it actually will, if you allow it and you just stop for a moment, you connect in to that connection. It's very powerful when we place our hands on our hearts and we bring a little bit of loving awareness to ourselves in a moment. So anytime that you're feeling like anxious or like things are getting out of control, you can be sitting in your doctor's office and you just put your hand on your heart and you retune in back to yourself, and you remind yourself, this, what do I need? Like, what do I need in this moment? This is my moment.
And don't let them take it away from you, right?
No.
Like you're prepared, you
Yeah.
have your attunements that have happened and you've written it down and
Yeah.
you have a conversation about it.
Absolutely.
That is very helpful. We're helping our listeners build their toolkits. So their mindful self-compassion toolkit. I love that. What do I need?
Yes.
That is a fabulous question that I'll probably take away. What do I need? What do I need in this moment? What do I need right now? What are some common misconceptions or misunderstandings, let's say, that you may encounter about the concept of self-compassion? I know you talked about the meditation and 20 minutes and it just being so overwhelming. How do you, yeah, what, let's do some myth busting and how do we address that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think for a lot of people that are looking, like that want to build practice, I think the one big one for people is time commitment. Is this perception that in order to build a practice, it's going to take so much time. So, why I just can't do it right now because it's too much of a commitment. And So I always say to people, small steps to big change. And it's like, it doesn't necessarily have to be that mo like so big in the beginning. And again, it goes back to like maybe it is just walking around and putting your hand on your heart and reconnecting to self. There's little ways that you can start to integrate things like mindfulness and mindful self-compassion into your life and make meaningful change if you want it. Oftentimes, and you know this, you're a change practitioner. People have to
Yeah.
want to change.
It's that desire. We gotta
Desire, yes.
there I understand and there's an awareness, but I have to, the
Yes,
desire has to be there before I
that's
can
right.
make the next
That's right.
steps.
Yes, 100%. So you can't force someone into wanting to try something new and to into evolving and moving from a sticky spot, right? So that's like one of the biggest, I would say one of the myths is that it has to be like an all or none type of practice. Another one is that some people misinterpret self-compassion as being selfish.
Yes.
Right? I don't know if you can.
Self-indulgence. Yes.
Yes, like,
How do
yes.
you, especially with this culture, in a culture where they're like self-care, that's selfish. Did they
Yeah.
equate it with that? And we say, oh, self-care is not selfish because we're trying to dispel that particular, you know what I mean?
Yes, 100%.
Myth.
Yes. And so you just hit the other one on the head, like where people get confused, all tied together between the selfishness and the self, the this whole piece is the confusion between self-love, self-care, and self-compassion is that they're all the same thing. They're all tied together in one little bow and they all mean the same thing. And they all have very distinct differences and they're all important. It's not to say that one is more important in my life than another, but they actually are very different. So like and I if we have time, I'll just share like the difference between them. But self-love is that appreciation and respect for self. So the acceptance of oneself fully. So I've come to this place where I accept myself fully. Whereas self-care is actually a process. So it's a process of establishing behaviors that actually build a holistic lifestyle of well-being. So it's kind of that promotion of healthy life. How do I manage all of the things in my life that are necessary to make me feel like well, embody wellness in my life? So that's the nuance between like self-love and self-care.
Self-care.
And self-compassion is that treating myself with kindness the way that I would a loved one. And so there's kind of like those are all the kind of nuanced differences between the three of them, I would say. And so when we think about that, when I go back to that idea of, is self-compassion selfish? I find it the act of itself, like the act of self-compassion, you're including yourself in a circle of compassion, which is a humbling act. When you think about it, the act of self-compassion itself
Yeah. It's a
and
humbling
having the
act.
courage to be is very humbling. There's nothing selfish about that at all.
Part of your becoming, like I go back to the story that you shared, like
Yeah. Yeah.
becoming, you're it grow, yeah, moving into something else.
Yeah.
Even just thinking on that and culture and cultural like factors, and if there's this misconception of between self-love, self-care, self-compassion, cultural factors can influence how individuals may even perceive self-compassion. How do you approach your practice, like teaching mindful self-compassion in a way that resonates with individuals from, diverse cultural backgrounds?
Yeah, it's a great, great question to bring up, because to your point, different, not only do different cultures value love differently, how you interact differently. And one of the big parts of that we teach in self-compassion is the value of touch. And touch has a huge variance amongst different cultures. And so you have to be really aware and understand as you bring different people into these types of experiences, and just be honest and ask questions. If you, if like for me, when I bring people into a workshop for mindful self-compassion, if I don't know how someone feels about touch, I will ask. I'll say, listen, I'm not aware. Is there, if anyone is here is uncomfortable, then it's not part of your experience, and that can't be part of your experience or won't be part of your experience. But if you're open to it, then great. You have to be willing to explore cultural diversity in any approach that you bring forward, and recognize that it's not one size fits all. And that's very much a reality of any sort of practice like this. It's going to strike that chord anywhere, right? For sure. Absolutely. Yes.
Thank you. So much to think about. I think we're probably going to wrap up. I have a final question.
Okay.
I have a final question. Let's have a bit of fun.
Okay.
Thinking of our third bloom, my third bloom, your third bloom. The various stages of that. If you could give yourself one piece of advice, like to your younger self, about the menopause transition and mindful self-compassion, what would it be?
You know, I've been asked a question like this before, and the thing I would always say to my younger self is, be kind. Just be kind to everyone. There's no reason to not be kind to every person, every being. So, you know, and when I, and to yourself, because this world is hard, it's harsh, and it's going to be harsh on you and your body and your experiences. And so, you got to give yourself kindness and everyone around you.
I love that. Give yourself, be kind to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. You need it. You need more teaspoons of kindness out there.
Teaspoons, tablespoons. Come on. Give me the
tablespoons.
Soup ladle.
Give me that measure. Give me a measuring cup. I need a measuring cup of kindness. Forget the teaspoon. Leave that one behind.
I love that. And finally, where can our listeners find you? Are you on socials? Do you have any kind of programs happening? Let us know.
I do. Yeah, I have socials. I'm on LinkedIn and Instagram. So my handle on Instagram is double J strategic. I'm on LinkedIn as well. And then you can find me on my website, doublejstrategic.com. And that's where you can find info about my new program, Mindful Habit Changing, which is it's being launched as a rolling program. It's really exciting. It's the integration of mindfulness and habit changing models. Mm-hmm. And I'm just excited that it's that we're bringing it forward. And my partner and I have been working on it for 2 years. And I know from my own experiences that this is going to change lives.
Oh, I love that. I love this for you. This is so exciting.
Yeah.
We will definitely be checking it out. So there you have it. As we wrap up today's insightful conversation with Jen James, I want to express my sincere gratitude to you for the soft landing. That was very special. And special to share with listeners, and just the transformative power of mindful self-compassion, and to think about it and kindness. And, you know, Jen, your expertise in guiding individuals through career transitions, life transitions, even just the journey of menopause and having this conversation has been incredibly insightful. What do I need? You know, listeners, Jen has illuminated how mindful self-compassion can serve as a powerful tool during the menopause transition, offering kindness and understanding during moments of physical discomfort and even emotional turbulence. In a world that often overlooks the unique experiences of menopausal women, Jen reminds us that the importance of extending compassion to ourselves is critical as we navigate this significant life stage. I encourage you to explore how mindful self-compassion can support you or a loved one through their third bloom journey, their menopause transition journey. Remember, self-compassion isn't just a luxury. It's a necessity, especially during times of transition and change. And for more information on Jen's work and resources related to mindful self-compassion and even menopause, be sure to check out the episode notes. Thank you for joining us today. And until next time, may you approach life's transitions with kindness and compassion, starting with yourself. Thank you, Jen.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of My Third Bloom. If you found value in our conversation, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Your support means the world to us and helps us reach more incredible souls like you. Remember, you're not alone on this journey. Connect with us on social media at My Third Bloom, visit our website, and be part of our thriving community. Until next time, keep blooming and embracing the beauty of your third bloom. This is Trisha Blake, signing off with peace, love, light, and grace.